another year, another 12 opportunities to explore what's cool, what's interesting, what's weird in your own backyard. It's Under Rocks, where you help us send our adventurous correspondents out to discover those hidden gems in Northern Illinois. Send us tips at rocks@niu.edu, please. I'm Susan Stevens. This time, Jason Krieger and Dan Libman, with a big assist from tech giant Spencer Tritt, visit with some of the people who transform old places into new spaces.
From what I gathered, it's an episode dedicated to reclaimed buildings, right? More or less.
I think that's right. I think it's about revisiting the past and making use of something that had at one point been discarded, but then repurposing, finding a new use for it.
Initially, you set out to Mount Morris. Was that the first place you went to?
Yeah, well, I talked to an urban planner by the name of Ashley Sarver, and she gave us a tour of an area. I don't know if you're familiar with Mount Morris at all, but it is an area that at one point was very lively and very vibrant. And, you know, it still has a big community still lives there, and there's still a lot going on there, but maybe not quite as much as in the past. And so that there is an effort underway now to kind of, we decided the word restore wasn't right, but there's an effort underway to bring something new to Mount Morris and see what can be done, taking a look at what's already there and what could be, what could be done with it.
I'm Ashley Sarver. I'm an urban planner and in Rockford at Studio GWA.
Is there like a designation for a town that's in this position that's kind of like, it's not exactly faded, but maybe it's had better times, it's seen better times?
Well, I guess like in the overall urban planning and probably in general, it's like, they call us a rust belt. And so there's some things associated with that. Usually it's like a manufacturing past. And then kind of in the position now where, I mean, we're seeing it all over the country, but especially in the Midwest, where there's little towns like this that used to be really active, a lot of people on the street, a lot of employment, and now not so much. So.
And here was the printing press, right?
They had like 800 plus employees here.
Oh, wow.
I come from the town of Durand, which is 1,100 people. Uh-huh. So just thinking of like this size town being able to employ more than half the size of Durand is pretty impressive.
So just to get a little background before we look at the space, when they approached you, or when Chris Mann approached you, did you then do some research on it? How did you approach it?
Yeah, I mean, our first step, I came here with Gary, who I work with. We got a tour of almost every single building in this downtown from the city staff and just like local volunteers.
Wow.
And so we went and were able to go through all these buildings, and some of them probably haven't been, like, the upstairs of some of these maybe haven't been occupied for 30 plus years. So,
right.
So we came through, we looked at everything. Looked at a lot of historic photos. We did, some history research about how the town started and some of the background about, the cable company and the campus here. Had a lot of conversations, so.
So I'm guessing then that like whatever you discovered sort of informs your approach, and there's not some sort of cookie cutter thing that an urban planner would do to any city.
Yeah, I mean, historic renovations are inherently not cookie cutter. Uh-huh. They're always like a puzzle, and then there's always a surprise. So, like for an example in Sterling, when we're demoing a wall, it's like, oh, all of a sudden we find like the wallet of one of the contractors.
Oh, really?
That. You worked on the project.
With
so there's
money in it?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
That's awesome. So, maybe there's some surprises here in Mount Morris you could
tell
us about.
I bet so, yes.
Okay. So tell us about this space here. We're on the corner of
Wesley and Front.
And Front. Okay.
Yeah. So now it's a grass lot.
Beautiful.
But not so long ago, there was a building here, even I think up to 9 months ago.
Huh.
And the building was in rough shape. I think it's like a combination of, not a certain purpose for the building, but also water is one of the building's worst enemies.
It was a commercial building.
It was a two-story building and it was right adjacent to this. So actually what we see here, this exterior wall now for this building used to actually be the interior wall of the building that was there was some structural damage that, you know, we were concerned about that was going to have to be remedied for this to ever be, you know, a usable building again when it was still here. But now, as you can see, like, this is part of the old structure, and it tied into the building to the side here.
Okay.
And so the plaster you see was the interior plaster of the building adjacent. And now we have some work to do to try to protect this building now from, you know, the same fate. You know, it needs to be buttoned up a little bit so it doesn't have the same water damage.
So it's safer.
Yep.
They're not using it at the moment?
No, I think this used to be the old Felker grocery.
Oh, yes.
Back in the day. Well, not so long ago, but...
Chris Mann's cousin.
Yeah, and if you look at this one, we've done like a little bit of these, like, historic analysis of what used to be here to try to inform where we might go for a future design.
Right.
And here, under that 1895 plaque, you can see that there's kind of like this mismatched brick. Yeah, there used to be a bay window here that, you know, kind of protruded out from the building and was really kind of an important feature of the building. So we would try to see, like, if we could replicate that.
I'll put that back on.
Bring that, something like that, back on here to be a prominent feature again, because otherwise it kind of, you know, there's something missing there.
For sure. Does your research indicate why they bricked it up in the first place?
No, we haven't figured that out yet. I imagine just because it was out from the face of the building, it probably had some water damage if it wasn't, you know, properly maintained. Uh-huh. So like when we're talking about the street face, you know, it's really a good feature to be able to have this kind of continuous wall, what we call the urban wall.
Oh.
And then when you lose a building like this, it's a missing tooth. And so all of a sudden there's kind of this disconnection from the rest of it. And there's been a couple, right? So there used to be a building there where we see the truck parked there. So, and then of course on the north, there's some missing teeth there too, but not anything that we can't work with to try to get some activity going.
Is there a possibility to like make it a cool green space or something like
that? Yeah, and we've even thought about, you know, could you make it adjacent to this building so that more of this building comes out into that lot and so that there's a little more space for this building to work with to gain some square footage and maybe it's in a nice outdoor seating or something like that.
That'd be cool. What does Mount Morris have that other towns don't have?
Well,
what's special about it?
Right now, I mean, I see a ton of energy from the people here who are throwing a lot of time and effort into making the downtown, you know, lively again.
Yeah.
Like the Straw Festival, and of course that attracted us for our bike ride not so long ago to come down here and see the Straw Festival. And I think there's just, you know, there's some unique qualities. Of course, the campus itself, this doesn't really exist many places to have an intact campus like this. You know, these buildings are late 1800s, early 1900s, and then it was for the cable company, the cable bros, who occupied it and employed those 800 people. So I think this campus setting and this kind of downtown square like this is pretty unique for the area. So originally it was like colonists from Maryland who came out here, and they saw this hill, hence the mount. And it was like this mount around this timber area. So they came out because of the wooded area around here, and then were hoping it would become kind of the next big thing between Galena and Chicago.
Mm-hmm.
And that ended up actually kind of being Rockford,
Midway Village.
Right. Yeah. So they kind of missed that opportunity, but they were kind of priming themselves to be able to be competitive and be that next big thing between Chicago and in Galena. So
is that why there's a township called Maryland around here? I always wondered about that.
Probably.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean the street to the west of the square is Seminary Avenue. So this originally being a seminary and not a college, that was kind of a harkens back to those days.
Okay. Can you show us around? Let's see.
Let's see what we got. So here, I mean, like, I noticed that a lot in Ogle County is a lot of these plaques, you know, on some of the bike rides we do, I often stop and look at those plaques that everyone else finds boring, but I think they're really interesting of, you know, the stuff that's happened here, and some of it you can see, some of it's still intact like this, some of the stuff we see along those country roads, you know, it's like it used to be there, but no longer is.
Yeah.
But yeah. So, I mean, like these buildings here, it's really kind of cool because they have four faces. So like these buildings here that are more the commercial stuff, you know, it's really just one face of the building that you're interacting with. Has its main entry. It has its windows kind of on that, on the west elevation, and that's kind of the most way that people interact with it. Whereas with the campus buildings, you know, they're a little more complex in that you kind of enter from different areas. There's uh-huh. more ways to get into them. There's windows on all sides. There's really no true like back of house area for these buildings, versus over there where there's the alley and that's used for some of the operational things. So.
And so when they're designed, like, they're designed for that.
Right. Okay. I mean, they were designed to be a little more stately, right? So to stand apart from and kind of have this open space around it where people could spend time and probably study. And, you know, this is kind of operating more as the quad. And
yeah. And so as an urban planner, what does that say to you in terms of what it can be reclaimed as, or if that's the right word?
Yeah. It usually sets itself up pretty well for residential, like apartments or condos or something like that. Not so much probably for like a first floor retailer or a restaurant quite as well, unless you had something that was maybe more of a destination, because uh-huh. you know, you don't immediately see it unless you kind of walk up to it, versus if you're here, you park right in front of it, you go right in. This has kind of, you know, this entrance to it and this kind of time you spend going through the campus before you reach the final destination. So, okay. And then over here is the Coliseum building. We're on the move, Spencer.
if we wanted to, I used the word reclaim before. Is that the right word, or you know,
yeah.
reuse a building?
Yeah, I think there's kind of like 2 degrees of looking at it. There's preservation.
Okay.
And so there's like kind of maintaining intact what it was or restoring it to how it originally was.
Yeah.
What our firm does a lot is historic renovations. So it's trying to maintain those cool historic features, the pieces that are really important to the history of the building, but modernizing it so that it can you know, be something else. So a lot of times what we'll see, like, obviously a lot of this used to be classrooms for the college.
Mm.
But like I said, could it be residential apartments? That's a pretty easy conversion to be able to do.
Right. Like a fire escape. And...
Yeah, the gym is a little bit harder because it has that big open space. And so uh-huh. if we're using historic tax credits, which is something we're looking at trying to secure for this area by setting it up as a historic district, then, you know, if we go and do that, then we have to follow the National Park Service's guidelines for rehabilitation. So then we have to be pretty sensitive about, you know, which windows we put in, or, you know, the woodwork that might be within the building okay. still. We have to maintain that, restore it.
So I'm guessing that's a decision you need to make early on. You can't flip back and forth too easily.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. You make that decision right at the beginning. It is harder to do it later, though not impossible. It just kind of depends what decisions you're making, because right away you want to know, like, am I going to put the more expensive windows in, or mm-hmm. you know, not saying that other windows are cheap, but
sure.
there's kind of this cost benefit you play with the tax credits to see if it's worth the extra effort of restoring, which yeah. in my opinion usually is. So
so you guys had a lot to do with the Canet distillery, right?
Well, yeah, and that's one where we actually didn't go through the National Park Service program with the historic tax credits for it. We worked with the Kennys to turn the old theater, the old Hub mm-hmm. Theater, into the distillery. And so we tried to keep as many of those cool features as possible. Like in the main theater area, there's this decorative plaster mm-hmm. That's in there that's been kind of painted now to accentuate it. When we first came in there, it was painted like rainbow bright colors.
Okay.
And so it's a little more subdued now.
That's where the tanks are and stuff?
Yeah.
That's what you're talking about?
Yeah, so the main theater area is now just full of these like, giant right. tanks.
Beautiful tanks.
Yeah.
All lit up. Sight when you're sitting at that bar drinking.
Yeah, have you been there for the light show?
No.
Oh, yeah, so they have the ability to kind of like light the tanks up with different colors.
Oh, man.
Show that off at night. Yeah.
You gotta head back, Spencer.
Yeah, right. I love how they kept the like feeder boxes, like those like side boxes on the side of the stage
right.
are still there.
Yeah.
It's so cool.
And that's one too where there's some hidden history in there. So like if you walk in, before you walk up to the bar, there's a little corner where they've dedicated to the history of the Hub Theater. And there's like a remnant, there's the wallet of the guy, and some leftover items that were in his wallet. And then just, you know, the old theater seat is still there. Oh. And yeah, so they maintain some of that history there.
So it looks like they are using this for something already, or some group is.
Yeah, I think the Art Center uses it some of the time. I know they were doing music lessons out of this building. So this is the cool old limestone building. These great columns to kind of, you know, add some grandeur here.
Uh-huh.
We see that we have a plaque here on the front of the building.
Step, Spencer!
Noting Gru Baker as the architect, 1865 to 1913. So
that's the firm that did this building.
Right.
Is there something significant about the limestone? Just
well, like, just that, you know, if you're, you know, looking around now as you go through these downtowns around here, it's not too common to find a three-story limestone building.
No.
Usually, you know, we see it in old foundations for houses or something like that. I've seen some, you know, limestone buildings where maybe the first floor has more of the limestone, but not all the way up. So it's really a pretty unique building in that sense.
Okay. Do you know if it's like local limestone? There are all sorts of like quarries around here.
I would imagine it probably is, or a Galena limestone.
Uh-huh.
Because it's just so heavy that usually if there's limestone around, it came from somewhere locally because it was just too heavy to haul around otherwise.
Just sort of a personal question, Ashley. When you're walking around, are you always seeing? are you able to turn off the urban planner in your mind, or no?
No. Okay. I'm not. And I got made fun of last Christmas because we were at a Christmas party for Jason's work, my husband's office, and it was at one of his, you know, coworkers, and she's in this great old house, right on the river, and so it's an older house.
I've seen that.
And she has all these like unique little things, like the windows are open with a certain type of lever that you don't see anytime, you don't see it anymore.
Uh-huh.
And so I was really fascinated with these levers on the windows, and like everyone was, I mean, they're all attorneys, they're all like, this is fluffy stuff, but I thought it was interesting.
Okay,
so.
That's cool.
You just see an old building sometimes, and you're like, "Oh, that could be that would be a great bar or something."
Do you see, like, uses for
well, little... I think you say that most of the time, Dan. When we're biking, you're like, "That would be a great brewery."
Specifically, that. Yeah, that is true.
But yeah,
no, I don't turn that off.
Yeah, I think I'm always looking at it a little bit differently. And sometimes it's like, "Hey, I like how it like I just see a building, and it's like I hope that one never goes away. Not necessarily that it always needs to change."
Oh.
But sometimes you just see something, you're like, that's a good one. I hope it sticks around. I hope it has a long life.
Is there like a criteria that when you say like, that's a good one, is it like a personal thing, or is there a certain ethos that you like to see? Or?
I mean, I like the smaller ones in general, like the little one and two stories that are kind of unassuming, and they're just, you know, they've been there a long time, and they've probably, you know, had 20 plus businesses in them over the life of their, you know, over the life of the building, but now we still have them, and they're still being adapted to be a different, you know,
change with the community.
Bakery or whatever. Yeah. So
do you like stone buildings?
I like the stone ones.
You like siding? You like vinyl siding?
I don't.
Okay.
No.
What's bad? What about these pillars? I mean, come on. Are
these,
what do you think about that?
These are good. They seem
okay.
Maybe not. I don't know what's happened with these guys. I mean, that's a little too stately for my personal favorites. But like, there's one in downtown Rockford. It's only like 2,000 square feet, which is tiny. It's 2,000 square feet, like the first floor of one of these buildings.
Okay.
It's just a little one story, but it's Art Deco, and it has this cool terracotta siding, and it has like teal and pink and cream colors. It's on Jefferson Street, on the east side of the river.
Okay.
It's the security building is what it's called. And I don't really know much about its history, but it's a cool little box over there.
Okay. I mean, these pillars aren't holding anything up. You don't need that thing there.
I mean, it seems like it might be important. We're in a good spot to notice some of the design features that carried out through Mount Morris. So you see the arched opening there on that second to last building.
Oh yeah.
And then again here on the Smith building with the Gilmore Insurance Agency. That arched opening, the blue arch. And then again on the building we were just at, underneath where that bay window would have been, another arched opening. So that's kind of a unique design feature that has played out in all these little spots downtown.
And that's by design, excuse the pun, but that's done deliberately. The sort of the buildings are kind of speaking to each other.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to dive in a little bit more to figure out, you know, was it the same architect? Was that kind of their thing,
right,
that they would put in? Or is it just something that's unique to the town? In Dixon, you know, we see arches like that happen a lot, and it's a lot because of the viaduct that they're mimicking. So even those arches that go over the roadway,
the town, yeah,
those are kind of mimicking the original old viaduct.
Huh. I just assumed it was the Moorish influence of the town.
Those Roman aqueducts, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Okay. Well, let's head to the town hall, which is just over there by the American flag.
That's the town hall?
The old one.
Do you guys have an end vision for what you're doing here or for the community itself?
Yeah, so I mean, what we've developed with the village here is this kind of physical representation, this drawing of, you know, this entire block of buildings and what they would look like if we restored those features to like their historic storefronts. So we did that by piecing together lots of historic photos side by side of all the buildings and then looked at what's currently there and then came up with a plan for how to, you know, bring it back to maybe its more historic features. So like for this one here on the corner, maybe it's removing that mansard roof that you see just on the first floor on the storefront.
That's called the mansard roof?
Yeah.
Okay.
So that was something that was commonly done in the 60s. And that's when, you know, these smaller towns were starting to lose business to the malls and the strip centers and stuff like that. So they started kind of mimicking some of the features that were being built out there in a way to try to draw people back to the downtown.
Right.
But ultimately, you know, it really wasn't as much about the design as just people's preference to jump in a car and go somewhere else. But we're seeing, we're seeing a return back to like to downtowns in general. People kind of want that authentic experience.
I think people hate malls now.
They're not doing great.
I never liked them all.
If they go away, that's all right.
Yeah, that's fine with me.
So,
and this would be perfect. I mean, so the idea then is to, and once you guys get it back to looking like that or sort of having more of that vibe, that'll attract more businesses. And
yeah, I mean, I think it's a combination of like, you don't want to do just all physical improvements because then you're still not really fixing the main thing, which is the main thing is to have people coming back and enjoying this as kind of the center of Mount Morris and a place to visit and spend time. So part of it's physical. If you make it more attractive, people will come, sort of thing.
Right.
But really is to fill it up with more people downtown. So in retail, they consider it, you know, the more rooftops you have, then you can kind of guarantee your business. Right, so that's how grocery stores operate, is they look around to see how many rooftops are around. Similar concept for downtown is that if we have rooftops, i.e. if we had a bunch of apartments in these buildings, you know, that means more people on the street, that means more people going into cafes and restaurants and bars, and that kind of guarantees people will come to the business. So they kind of go hand in hand.
Right.
But often it's having people move into the space first, so that's why it's really important to see these second floors, you know, convert into something that could maybe house more people.
Ashley and Dan talked a little about the stunning feat of turning an old theater in Rochelle into Kenny Farms Distilling. And many of us learned that it's Kenny Farms, not Kenny, like it looks. And back in the day, in the first few months of 2020, that's where the Under Rocks crew held its first big brainstorming meeting. So Dan Libman returned to the distillery to learn more about the building's transformation from owner-operator Doris Kenny. Kenny.
We just say Kenny.
Kenny, okay.
With this building in particular, I had been in here as a child, also as a young adult, dating my husband, and to revisit the building again, I mean, I had a lot of memories here too. And when we saw the tall ceilings and everything, it was perfect for what we wanted to do, but we also wanted to save a lot of the integrity of the building, a lot of the, you know, the old feel of it, because it's beautiful as it is. To my understanding, about 2011 was the last actual movie in here.
Not that long.
And then about 2014, another gentleman had started to work on the building, but I think fell short of a business plan. And about 2016 is when we learned that the building was coming available. And January 17, we had all of our team in place and started basically the rest of the tear out. Bill Schimmerhorn in the area, his grandfather had worked on this building, and so he had a lot of the original molds and things.
You mean like when it was originally being built?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So he's a total craftsman of his own with ornamental plaster work. And so once we connected with him, Bill was able to repair so many spots that it had become dilapidated. And so we were, in my mind, able to keep so much more of the structure than we originally thought.
Were there any surprises in doing the, do you call it a refurbish, or like what's the nomenclature that you
use? I think refurbish is a good word. There were lots of surprises along the way, and of course a lot of things with code.
There'll be a lot of challenges.
Yes, absolutely. And sometimes we didn't always get what we wanted, and other times it turned out better than we wanted.
You mentioned that you had been to this movie theater and that you had been on dates with your husband.
Yeah.
So, like, instead of having built a new building, you know, out of Lincoln Highway or something like this, you repurposed this one, you've given life to it.
I'll tell you, I specifically remember one instance. I would come to Rochelle and spend a week with my great aunt every summer. And I would visit with some of my cousins that would come as well, and cousin Kurt Larson specifically. He and I got dropped off from Aunt Blanche to watch a show. And so we were in this building, and he heard it was thundering and storming outside, and he said, "We better get back. She'll be worried about us." And so we I remember running across town to get back to her house, and later ended up getting in trouble from her because she was out here waiting in the car because of the storm. But, you know, I've got a very vivid memory of that. I was probably 10 or 12 years old, you know. And then my husband and I coming here for a show. So, yeah, to step back in this building was just deja vu, you know. And I had the warmth of the memories, just like I think a lot of people in town do.
Yeah. Any chance you remember the movie that you saw?
You know, I don't. I don't remember. I've tried that to think about that in the past.
Probably a lot of your customers are forgetting things that happened here.
Well, we hear a lot of things that I put my hands over my ears and say, not sure we need to know. You know, a lot of first kiss and things like that, first dates. And we have a lot of first dates coming here now, which is really neat. Yeah, we've got a couple that had their first date here. They've gotten engaged here, and next year they're getting married here.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so that's pretty cool.
Old School Pizza is a pizza parlor that is operated from the now-defunct Malta Grade School in Malta, Illinois. Josh Holbrook is the owner and operator. I sat down with Mr. Holbrook to discuss how and why he decided to run a business inside an old school, live in the school with his family, and also his hobby of collecting odd and quirky pop culture memorabilia. It's as if Pee-wee's Playhouse also doubled as a Pizza Hut. This is Old School Pizza. When did you move into this building here?
I guess it's been, it was about 3 years, I guess 2017.
2017?
Yeah.
So has it been renovation up until you opened around, was that March?
We opened in June.
June, okay.
Yeah. But, yeah, I was working on it for years. I mean, I spent about, when we bought the building, I spent about a year and a half or 2 years painting and cleaning and, you know, getting rid of stuff that was in here. And
Okay.
The building was in good shape, you know, structurally. It just was, it had been closed up for years, you know.
Well, I had read that this was built in 1937, so.
Yes. Yep.
Is there still a lot of the same architecture from then around?
Yep. Yeah, the whole front part of the building is still basically almost original. I mean, you could pretty much film a movie in there taking place in the 30s.
Kidding.
Oh, yeah.
So how long have you and your wife had a vision for something like this then?
Well, for years we had talked about getting maybe a church or some kind of a building, you know, something neat. But to be able to afford one is something else, you know.
I can imagine.
And,
the upkeep alone, right?
Well, that's it. And just, I imagine, that, you know, it costs so much money to buy something like this. And we found that we were working on my brother's house and a guy had drove by and told us that there was a school for sale really cheap. And when he told us how much, I go, man, it is cheap. So we looked into it, and you know, a couple weeks later, we were signing the contract to buy it.
Just like that, huh?
Just like that.
Wow.
Yeah, my wife's really cool, so she, you know, she seen the vision too. When we walked into it, it needed a lot of, you know, if you look past the paint and you know how dingy it was, there was a lot of potential.
Well, my wife went to school here back in. Boy, we're dating ourselves here, obviously, but in the early 90s, so she thought it was really cool that somebody was going to use this, because this closed in 2010, if my research is close on that.
Yeah, I think that's about right, and then that my friend who had bought it, you know, now we're friends, we've become friends through the process of me buying it, but when he bought it, he lives out of state, so it pretty much just sat closed up for about 5 years, and it did, you know, it really wasn't good for the building, you know.
Well, no, yeah, it's anything you leave alone. At the subdivision that we live in here in Malta, some of those houses after the crash sat for 3 or 4 years, and then all of a sudden you have mice coming in,
yeah,
and everything. You're like, ugh.
Nothing good, yeah.
Right. So what inspired you to open a pizza parlor here?
I love pizza. I figured since I have the building, you know, we wanted to live in it, but you know, to have this much space, we always talked about opening up a bar or something. So it made sense to do it. You know, we had the space and I had a lot of cool collectibles and I'm a pretty good cook. So
yes, you are. Speak to that.
Thank
personally.
You. I appreciate it.
So I live in Malta and I hear locals call your house and business Old Malta Great School. But I looked up this a little bit and you've referred to it as Holbrook University. Where did that come from?
Just me being a jokester.
Yeah.
Yeah. When I bought the building, I just started saying that to my friends and try to make it stick.
So where do you cook the food in the school?
It's in the, what do you mean in the school? In the,
well, in your house,
in
your building. Yeah.
There's a kitchen. There was a kitchen in the, off the library. I don't know if it used to be like a teacher's lounge or something, but there was a kitchen here already. So,
and this is the cafeteria that we're in now?
Yes. Yep.
Do you use the cafeteria for the pizza?
Yes. Yep, I use the cafeteria. It already had a lot of really nice features because they cooked a lot of food here already. So they had really nice, high-quality hoods and dishwashers and stuff and sinks already in here. So it saved me a lot of money. And
so a lot of it is the original?
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah. A lot of the stuff in the kitchen is, other than the ovens and the deep fryers and stuff and fridges.
And so your family lives in this building too. I guess what I was trying to think of logistically is, like a classroom, is that a bedroom? Do you have like a classroom as a living room? Like the teacher's lounge, like you were saying,
well,
is the...
What we have is each of us have a classroom as a bedroom.
Oh.
And the living room is the old library. So it's a nice big room, and right attached to it is the kitchen was already attached to the same room.
Every kid's fantasy. Transforming your school into a pizza joint / museum of cool stuff. Josh Holbrook, living the dream as owner-operator of Old School Pizza in Malta. Jason Krieger was the lucky reporter on that assignment. So many historic old buildings in our region that have been saved and made useful again. We didn't even get to the old Fargo Theater in DeKalb, now a skate park and concert venue, or Prairie State Brewery or Embassy Suites in downtown Rockford. What are some of your favorite repurposed, rehabbed, refurbished places in Northern Illinois? Let us know at rocks@niu.edu or through wnij.org. Thanks to Jason Krieger, Dan Libman, and all their guests in this episode of Under Rocks. And we salute the inimitable Spencer Tritt for his audio and video work on this and every episode. Got an idea for an episode of Under Rocks? Let us know about your favorite hidden treasures in northern Illinois and southern Wisconsin. Email us at rocks@niu.edu. And while you're at it, subscribe to the Under Rocks podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts. Under Rocks is produced by WNIJ at Northern Illinois University.
Ashley, tell me about the timber.
Yeah, okay. So like I mentioned, originally those Maryland colonists came here, uh-huh. and they saw all the timberland around the area.
Right.
And it makes you think that, you know, if there was that much natural native woods to Illinois, that there was probably some pawpaw trees in there.
Pawpaw trees? You know, that's North America's largest native fruit.
Well, I've learned that recently via WNIJ.
That's right, where you'll always learn something new. And you always hear something new every night. You know, Ashley, if you go to WNIJ.org and click the red button, you can make a donation.
You've made me do that before. Oh, I've done it, yeah.
My job is complete. We do this for all the subscribers. We have them come out and pretend like we're interested in this.